Hello and welcome to another episode of Adventures in the Creative Industries. My name is Eric Ravaglia, your one-man band, and oh my god, so a lot happened since the last episode. And to be honest, it's been really, really hard to get back into the swing of things. This is because, you know, once you lose momentum, it's pretty tough to sit there and get back in front of a mic. And mostly, you know that feeling when you're like inadequate and you think, oh, nobody cares about what you're going to say, what you're going to do. And also not being able to see people live took a real dump to the whole project. Because for me, it's all about, like, you know, speaking to people, being in the same room and vibing with somebody and sharing experiences and talking back and forth and listening and all of that. It's gone when Zoom or Skype or whatever is your only way of communicating, and when, you know, you have to do that for work and I just lost the main thing I love about doing the podcast, and that really sucked. So here we are now, because I just want to get back into it, you know. And sometimes when you want to do something, you're just gonna have to do it. So I picked up the mic and I'm like, you know what, my wife is next door doing her parents consultations remotely, and my little daughter is sleeping, and I thought, you know, I have to work, but I can spend half an hour in front of a mic to keep you and myself engaged with something different. And I thought, you know, maybe I can just keep you company. Maybe I don't need to, like, jump through hoops and come up with ways, but we can just talk about something, you know, we can just share things remotely. And if you listen to this and you have something you want to say, you want to share, please do. Just send me a message, send me a tweet. You know where to find me. And I just haven't been very active socially lately because this fucking thing has been, like, hard and it's negative and it's, I just made me want to disappear for a while. It made me want to curl into a ball and just focus on the most important things that for me are family and work, because of course work is necessary, and that's it. That's what I did. And I did a fair amount of video gaming. Not throughout the pandemic, I've got to say. I've been the business with my father-in-law is full swing, and a bit of money is coming in, which is interesting, and I've been learning loads. But also I've been, the work dried up straight away. Like, you know, the first couple of months have been an absolute bloodbath, and then a few bits and pieces came in very slowly, and now just in the last 3 months I would say stuff started to pick up sort of. And, you know, of course we need to thank the government in the UK for their support to self-employed people, although I'm really sorry for all the people that fell through the nets. And, you know, to all my friends, they were like single companies with one director paying themselves wage. I'm sorry, guys. The government just didn't get far enough there. And at the end of the day, they made it a bit of a tax issue there. And there's no point getting into the details of it. But it was just, you know, sucked for a lot of people. It really did suck for a lot of people. And the uncertainty is still there, and it's not going anywhere. I mean, it's the 5th of October today, and there's so much going on. My God. It's like we're in this fueled, we're in this like media fueled negative broth where everything is sensational. And as soon as you have a negative number, you're just going to blast it to the top of your lungs. And, you know, I'm not trying to bash media here, although we have done a fair amount of bashing in the past. It's more like, why does it have anything and anything has to be sensationalized so that people pay attention? You know, I understand where they're coming from. This is the business model, but Jesus Christ, it's too much. So reading the news is becoming more and more of a cumbersome thing to do. And honestly, screw it. You know, I do read it every once in a while, trying to check both left and right just to make sure that I have, you know, sort of like a more rounded opinion on what's going on. And to be honest, it feels like everybody's throwing stuff at the wall to see what stick, and then whatever story is attracting more clicks, they'll build on top of that. That's what my impression has been, and I found that horrendous. And in a period like this, it made everything so much harder. So yeah, man, I'm not on a news diet, but clearly trying to cap my time reading that stuff, because between COVID and Brexit, it really doesn't look good, and there's no point reminding yourself of that every single day. So I did take to video gaming, especially lately, a lot more, because this amazing game called No Man's Sky has showed an incredible development, you know, from being the worst game ever delivered to the public to becoming one of the, you know, video game darlings, and everybody loves the game. Oh, everybody that is into that type of game loved the game and revalued the studio who did the game, and they've been updating it massively throughout the years. I mean, when it came out, there was not much that to show there. All the promises before the game got delivered were broken, and there was a lot of, you know, negative press about it, of course. And but then over the years, they really outdone themselves, and the game now is incredible, and it really quenches my sense of wonder and discovery, where you have this universe that is procedurally generated, and you have billions of worlds to explore, billions of planets and galaxies, and it's fucking hell, man, it's amazing. There's so much to do. They added a lot of story to it, and I just found it like this thing that you go, you take off, and you land on a planet. You have only an idea what the planet is, because you have a scan that says, you know, this is a rainy planet, or this is a paradise planet, or this is, you know, a red planet, or whatever. And you land on that planet, and there is like a set of fauna and a set of flora, and everything is unique and it's bespoke. And yes, there's a bit of grind to do because you need resources. There's a lot about resource management. But, you know, that sense of wonder and seeing that from this planet, you can see the other planets and you can see the star, or you might have one sun or two suns. And it's like, it's unique. It's a unique game. And I am so grateful to Hello Games for making something like that. And in a time like this, it was great to like, you know, switch off and plug in and just explore these worlds. And yes, grind a little bit, but mostly the exploration aspect of it has been amazing. And if you're into exploration games, or you're into this kind of sense of wonder, or you want to experience this sense of wonder, I would absolutely suggest that you get a hold of this game. It's on every platform pretty much apart from the Switch, and you can buy it for probably a discounted price by now, and you just experience this beautiful setting and get lost in it when you need to just switch off. And the pace of the game is whatever you make it. It could be incredibly slow, or it could be super fast, depending on what you like. So it's entirely up to you to explore this world and leave in it the way you want it. So that's been a great distraction. And lately I started to play this game called Hades, which it just came out, and is a roguelite. So it's one of those games where you start a game, you die, you have to start all over again, but you proceed, you progress in the game. And the way they built it, the developers, Supergiant Games, they made something that where dying is sort of part of this progression, and the way the characters are written, and the way you master your weapons, and you have your buffs, and it's actually quite interesting. It's very interesting, and it really wants, it makes you want to play more, and dying is actually part of the game instead of being a chore. It's actually interesting, and it allowed that progression. So that's another game I just started playing. So I had like maybe a couple of hours on it, and I'm really enjoying it. I mean, absolutely enjoying it. That's been my main distraction. The main reason why I wanted to do this episode, besides keeping you company for half an hour, it's I want to talk about a couple of tweet that I came across. I know this is like very cheap, you know, like, oh, you find a tweet, you want to make an episode, fuck it, why not? I thought it was interesting, and there's a lot to it. So I found this guy, it's called Tom Hurst on Twitter, and he's a freelancer, clearly, and his points are really, really good, and some of it really hit home. One of which is, it's like this like misrepresentation about freelancing that a lot of people have in their minds, and especially now with the pandemic, a lot of people going freelance, you kind of realize on the job, which is like, his tweet reads like, do you want to code, draw, write all day? Then don't go freelance. Get a job or stay in your job, because freelancers need to do these things as well as, which is client communications, negotiation, marketing, financials, and sales. So your core skill is only half of the work. And I thought that like the way it puts this is incredibly truthful. Freelancing, it really comes with a lot of extra added work that you need to do to it, because you're not just the worker, you're also the manager, and you're also the PR, and you're also HR, and you're everything else. So you're like, you are dealing with running a business by yourself, and all these elements are really grinding. And you know, you might like client communication like I do, or you might like doing the sales part like I do, but maybe you hate negotiations. You know, maybe you don't want to talk about your pricing, and maybe you don't like doing your marketing on and off and doing your Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. You know, it's relentless. It really is. So I thought you put it really, really well, very, very concise. And also the other thing that Tom Hurst does, he has an amazing thread on pricing, which is the main reason why I'm back doing this podcast, is because I read this Twitter thread like in end of June 30th, that's when he put it out. And since then, I've been playing with the idea of doing an episode on pricing. Of course, I wanted to speak to people, I wanted to have interviews and stuff. But then, like, I just did not have time. Being by myself and running two businesses, having a family, there's just no chance that I'll be able to, like, book people to be interviewed, just ask a few questions, then ask someone else a few questions. I just don't have the energy. You know, you realize how there's only a finite amount of energy. Anyway, enough with the excuses. Here's the deal. He says, pricing freelancing project, everything I've learned. So every one pricing strategy that you can apply to every real world engagement is often a fallacy. And I agree with that, because it just doesn't work. You know, I do charge daily, but there are so many projects where there is a budget, or it just doesn't work out that way. And he says, learn these pricing methodologies: hourly billing, daily billing, retainers, fixed pricing, and value-based pricing. Understand their pros and cons, understand your circumstances, understand the project, and choose appropriately. The thing I like about this, it's putting it in such a clear way. And even just from this tweet, you understand the complexity of pricing yourself. And he goes along, charging by the hour doesn't work in favor of freelancers, which is true. If you need to use it to get started, stop using it as soon as you can. Like pricing by the hour. I agree in principles, but there are certain projects that are so small, and there's certain things that you need to do that are so like quick that there is no need to charge for a full day. I would argue that probably you would charge for a half a day, which is usually like you're gonna hit this 4 hours, you know, because once by the time you do the thing, and then there's a tiny bit of amends, you know, you're gonna hit the half a day. But usually a day would cover for smaller stuff. And then he says, hourly billing is by far the worst pricing methodology to use for profit. And that's what I like about this thread. It's like he's introducing the meaning of profit for freelancers. Because that's the thing a lot of people don't realize. It's like when you sell your time for money, right? And people gives you a project, you might think, oh, wow, great. I'm making money anyway. Even if I overwork and I get paid less, I am still making money, which is true. But you got to treat yourself like a business. And if a business doesn't make profit, then a business is not viable. And overusing your time for without profit, if you work hard and you don't get compensated for it, I realize there are a couple of things that happens. One, you feel absolutely underappreciated. And when you've done the work and you're tired and you crunch to reach that goal, to the completion of the project, you find yourself upset. And whilst for a business is more about cold hard numbers, so if you can't afford your overheads, then the business is not viable, so you have to make profit on top of the time you're working. So if you're working a day and you charge, like I charge $350 for a day, then you have to be able to make something on top of that. That is profit. So if you need 350 to leave and you charge 400 for a day, then your profit is £50, right? And if you don't do that, or if you even charge less, then you're not making profit. And then, although you don't have overheads, or you do have overheads, but they're very small overheads, you pay on a physical level as a freelancer, in my opinion. So your mood goes down, you feel underappreciated, you doubt your own knowledge, your own skills, and that takes a toll on you as a professional. And eventually, too many episodes like this will lead you to burnout, you know? So like, for us, for as a single business run person, freelancer, sole trader, whatever, that is important to take into account. And then he goes on. Hourly billing is by far the worst methodology to use for efficiency. Because do you want to avoid estimating every small task? Yes, please. Filling out timesheets? Hate that. Sending tons of invoices? Even worse. Or having to justify every time you go over? And yes, so avoid hourly billing is right. Because if you're estimating an X amount of hours for a job, then you have to explain yourself every time. And it's like the same happens if you do daily billing, you know, because you still need to account and explain that day. And then it says, if you're instantly available, expect to be asked to lower your price. There are two ways to bill daily. 1 day, 8 hours, or 1 day equal 1 day. Always use the latter. The former robs you of your autonomy, which is exactly right. Use the time for yourself to organize your day, but don't quote as with time, because it's problematic. And I can tell you I had loads of issues with it because I made that mistake many times over. Then it says, if you want to raise your rates in future, when billing by the day, max out to selling 4 days per week to clients. Give yourself time to grow your own business. And that is something nobody does, or nobody I know at least. Probably somebody does, but I don't do it myself. And what Tom is saying here is treat yourself like a business. And if you're not working on research and development, if you're not working on yourself and your business to grow your business, you ain't going to grow your business. You're always going to encounter certain issues that smaller businesses that can grow encounter. So I think maxing out selling 4 days is a good point here, although it's very hard to follow. And then he says, if you bill your client daily, you're giving them a day's work, nothing else. It's a rolling engagement for a reason. Day rate can't come with a guarantee of completion. That is another point. On that, I would say it really depends on the project. Like if you're doing something like I do, so there is, you're producing a video or animation, or you're helping with, you know, brand design, you're delivering a logo or a brand document or whatever it is you're delivering, you are committing to a deadline to deliver a project. If it's a rolling engagement, I think that we need to make a distinction there between rolling and not rolling engagement. And if it's a rolling engagement, then it's different and you have to keep that freedom. That is a gray area in the UK because the new regulation that have been introduced with IR 35, which are there to practically help tackling disguised employment, is, you know, as a company, you work for another company and they'll pay you freelance rates and they'll pay less taxes for you, but you are actually effectively working full time. So you'd have to be there at a set time. You have to work on stuff they tell you to work on. So you basically act as an employed person, even though you're self-employed. And that's what they're trying to tackle with IR 35. So what that means is, like, if you have to work at set times, if you that are decided by your clients, and if you have your freedom is limited, you are in a gray area because you're effectively working as an employed individual. If you are not able to justify and explain that you are indeed self-employed and you work whenever you want, you pay for your own machine and so on, you might encounter some issues. Like, for instance, one of my clients, we have a rolling engagement and they book 15 days in advance on my time, and I tend to work 1 or 2 days a week for them. But I decide when to work for them. I can work 2 half days, for instance, or I can work a full day or 2 full days, depending on the amount of work that we need to do. But it's all entirely up to me. Again, back to that IR35 sort of like stand where it becomes a really gray area. If you do part-time job for someone where you're given exactly what to do, when to do it, then again, gray area. Tom continues, and now we touch on how much to charge, which I think this is an incredible, this is very useful way of helping you calculate your worth, which is you can't charge a premium if your individual value isn't obvious. Things that increase perceived value and thus project price are the scarcity of your time, availability, what you've done before, credibility, and the project price itself. So this is important to keep in mind if you want to charge more, if you want to pivot into some different services. And I take his point here. It's all pretty straightforward, I would say, as a freelancer. These are things that you need to keep in mind regarding your value or the value you offer. Then he carries on saying proposals are more important than estimates. Don't get tricked into sharing tons of project-specific information in a proposal. If you can't write a proposal without research, then you need a pre-project. Discovery, work, adds value, and should come at a price. I find myself in situations where I have basically offered my knowledge for free, where, you know, I spoke to a client, and to get that project, we talked about a lot of specific information about that project. Even if it wasn't an actual proposal, it was me selling my services to the client, explaining what I can do for the client and what the client can do to help himself. And I find myself in a situation where the client take the advice and run with it without using my services. So that happened to me in a handful of occasions, especially with bigger clients, which is really annoying, because basically I gave you a 2-hour consultation for free where you get ideas so what we can do together, and then you don't pick me for the services. And whilst in some occasion things haven't turned out great and clients came back to me, I realized that it's, you know, the discovery work, your ideas are valuable and should come at a price. And this is something I learned the hard way. So Tom again has a good point here. And then we go back to the pricing methodology. And he says, you don't have to use the same pricing methodology for every engagement. One client might be a day rate. A second client might be a fixed price project. Or a third client might be a retainer. Use the strategy that fits the work best. I agree with this. I mean, there is no one size fits all, especially with pricing. And some clients, you have a better relationship, but you want to do certain type of work at a certain amount of money. And some other clients, you want to charge more because it's a faster project and it needs to be done in a certain way. So it really depends on the situation. And what Tom is doing here is giving you a sort of framework to think about this before you price for a project. So I think that's why I think it's very valuable what he's saying here, because it allows you to think about things in a different way before you price a project, that is. We talked about day rate, and then he touches on fixed price projects. And he says, rules for fixed price projects. Get a deposit, get a fixed scope. To reduce the price, you must reduce the scope. Don't use estimated days times day rate equals price. Add a minimum 20% contingency and price high enough to make a profit after you paid yourself. And now here, again, great, great point. Price high enough to make a profit after you paid yourself. And that's how you run a business. And this is the thing I struggle with the most, because I always thought freelancer's time, you know, you're lean, you work lean, you charge one day for one day. And it's true for many projects. But often, very often, I work longer than what I quoted, and asking for more money is always complicated. And whilst some clients I understand and certain things take time and pay you more, but then they would tend not to go with you again. Because although you have delivered something for a good level, you weren't able to keep the price down. And that is not perceived positively. That's why I think Tom has a great point here. Whilst you might lose the gig if you charge a bit more, if you don't lose the gig, you will manage to make the right amount of money. And if you work for 5 days, saying, and you pay yourself for 5 days, if you can put 20% contingency on top of that, that money will cover for your business expenses and then profit. Because although you work as a freelancer and you work your time into the job that you do, you've got to be able to make some profit. And it's so hard, this, to take on board. Like, it makes me feel sick almost, because I never do it. And it makes sense that you would do it, because that's how businesses make money. For instance, this is how an agency makes money, okay? You work with a big agency. The big agency will call, will might have a production team in-house, or they will hire a production team to make the project. Now, the agency make, saying a project cost, project budget is 20K. And the agency, of course, needs to pay for the creative people that work on the project. They needs to pay for the producers that work on the project. I'm talking about video, animation, whatever. And in that ballpark. And then they will have to pay for the professionals. They will make the video. So let's say they come to me. It's an animation that takes, say, take 15 days to produce. So I would charge 15 days. So what's happening here is, why, let's say you charge for 300. So you get your calculator out. Let me get my calculator out. So I charge 350 a day times 15 days. That's 5.2K, right? The budget was 20K. So you get paid 5.2. The agency probably spent another $2,000 on production fees and creative fees. Let's say you spend $4,000. Say it's a complicated project, it takes another $4,000. So that takes us to £9,000, right? £9,250. So the agency will take the 20K, spend 9,000 on the project, and usually pocket 2 to 3 times what their actual cost was. And this is just the way agencies work, because agencies have overhead. They're paying, they have to pay the bills, they have to pay the people, they have to make money, they have to make profit. But whilst you can be charging 3 times what your actual value is, you should be able to add a 20% contingency on top. It should be a thing, because more often than not, you're going to need that 20% contingency. And that's the reality of it. So the deposit, I think if you can do, you know, maybe 40, 60, and the times that you can do that, that's great. I don't know how many agencies do that. Usually agencies are pretty good at paying afterwards, you know, so you wouldn't, I never ask for a deposit for working for an agency. I never ask 40% upfront. Maybe I should, who knows, but he's got a point. The fixed scope, oh my God, that's very important. If anything goes above and beyond that, you are screwed. Because if it grows all sorts of limbs and you're not, you haven't quoted for it, or you haven't stopped the project on time to say, hey guys, wait a second, to do that, you need to pay me X more, you're going to end up overworking yourself, you know, because you want to do a good job. But at the end of the day, you want to do a good job. And if you end up overworking yourself, you're going to just suck energy out of yourself. You have a jar of energy which is full, and every time it gets depleted, it gets worse and worse until a point where you get burned out. If you don't take breaks, if you overwork too long, too many times, you can do crunch week for months, you know. And that's one of the problems with freelancing. You end up doing that. And in the podcast, we spoke to many of people that had that problem. We talked about burnout with David Hartman, one of the few, I think it was episode 1 or 2, maybe 3, we were talking about that, and that's a reality of it, you know? And then the estimated days, time, day, rate, equal price, that's what we're talking about. That's what I do, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work because, yes, you'll get paid, but yes, you always get paid less than what you worked because you haven't added the 20% contingency. Then it says fixed price projects are highly beneficial to efficient freelancers, which is very true, when quality and if quality is retained, of course, which it should be the key, the milestone here. Quality should always be there, no matter what you do. At least you should always give it your very best or whatever you do, and there shouldn't be any slacking. That's why you're a freelancer. You know, you're always racing to make a better project than the one you just completed. That's just the nature of being a self-employed individual. And then he goes on saying, you know, some people will pick the cheapest price because it's the cheapest. Some people will pick the most expensive price because it's the most expensive. If you're the most expensive option and a prospect who cares can understand why, your positioning is off. Price tells its own story, but it needs backup from credibility. And that's very true. I work through word of mouth. 90% of my projects come through word of mouth, and I'm glad that that's the case, because, you know, clients are happy with what I do. But clearly, you need to have something that backs your credibility. And the more you have, the higher you can make your price. Because if the higher the demand, the higher the price you can ask for. And that's something I need to learn. I need to get better at that 100%. It's not that I don't have the credibility. It's the fact that I can't really show it to someone without sitting with them and explaining to them what I've been doing and how I can show that. Let's skip a couple of tweets and go to the value-based pricing recap. Your client's average lead value is X. You estimated your work would get them 100 leads in 1 year, right? So 100 leads, £500 per lead, 100 leads, that is 50 grand, right? So you give a price for your work based on a percentage of that figure. So if you want to go for value-based pricing, it's not about how long it takes for a project. It's about how much money that your contribution will generate in a business. And then you ask for a percentage of that figure. And if you can't show the value, then you can justify the price, which I agree with. And like, I don't do value-based pricing, but you could easily do that, especially if you're doing a lot of web design for a company, for instance, you're doing a lot of coding. I think that work is it can't just be quantified by the amount of time you spend on it, because something small that you might make could change a company. Because sometimes all it takes is a smart individual to change the course of one business, making one or two right decisions that maybe it didn't take you too long to come to, but it'll be incredibly valuable for the business. So in that case, I think value-based pricing is the way to go. You need to be advanced enough to understand your worth and how much you're bringing to the table, I think, to do value-based pricing. So probably to do value-based pricing, you have to have a lot of experience in the field. Okay, and then we touch on sort of like the last of this Twitter storm where he says, pricing freelancing projects is tough. There's no one-size-fits-all solution. Understand each method, have your preferences, be aware of your position, gouge what your clients are most likely to accept, apply the most appropriate strategy to get the job at a price you're happy with. So common sense at the end of the day. So when I read this thread in June, I felt like it energized me. It was like, I think I want to do the podcast again. I like to discuss these things. And those things are very important for everybody going freelance. And there's a lot of people that are going to have to go freelance. I thought, you know, this is a great point. I like to share it with the community, for the people that listen. And that put back in motion the idea of making another episode. And here I am. Here I am. So I wanted to share with you. So now. What am I going to do with the podcast? I want to do the podcast. I want to continue to do the podcast. And sometimes this feeling of being powerless and not having enough energy and not having the will to do it, because your mind tricks you and think that what's the point of doing it? You know, it's a negative. You get a negative sort of spin to it. It's annoying, but it happens. And it happens when you're too busy, you're too tired, and you don't have time for yourself. So then your side projects become cumbersome instead of being exciting and energizing. That's what happened to me. But then, you know, you sit down and you think, sometimes you just gotta do it. And maybe I can just keep you company for a half an hour every week or every other week. And maybe you care about listening, and maybe I'll have some points that you'll care about. Who knows? But for now, I am going to sign off. Thank you for listening, and I'll speak to you very soon.